This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 414, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
This Christmas, and as we trim the tree, how much fun it's gonna be together. This Christmas, fireside is burning bright.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 414. I'm Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Paul Montgomery.
Ho, ho, ho.
Oh.
Green giant. I don't know why I did that.
That is not seasonal
Weird.
At all. It's vegetables. Vegetables, which have been rendered unseasonal by a freezing process. Anyway, we are iFanboy. We like comics and pedantry. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the one that they thought was the best they read that week. They call it the Pick of the Week. And we talk about that on this show along with other books from the week that we have something to say about and any other kind of things we can come up with. Sometimes we talk about a book of the month. Sometimes we don't even know what that's going to be. That's new. Before we get going, there will be spoilers in the stuff that we're talking about. So if you haven't read the books, come back afterwards or forge ahead boldly. Whichever way you'd like to go with that, it's totally fine by us. But you just need to understand how this works because we don't want to be held responsible. Connor,
You
had the pick.
Black Science, number one, from Image Comics. Rick Remender, Mateo Scalera, Dean White is the pick of the week. And Rick Remender's been one of our favorite writers for a while. He's been one of the sort of industry-leading writers for a while in that he's doing a lot of big Marvel books. And he did the Uncanny X-Force. He's doing Captain America. But he really became one of our favorite writers way back doing Fear Agent for Dark Horse and for Image many, many years ago. His sort of sci-fi pulp story of Heath Houston's doomed life. And Black Science number one is Remender's, it feels like his return to that sort of his roots. It's not in that it's a story exactly like Fear Agent. It's not, but it feels very much in that vein. And just wacky fun. But I'm going to get to the story in a minute. First, I want to talk about Mateo Scalera, who worked with Remender on Secret Avengers previously. And I thought this issue particularly was a Mateo Scalera showcase.
Yeah.
And Dean
and
White as
Dean
well.
White showcase too.
Yes. I think the art was wonderful. One of the things that Scalera did on Secret Avengers and in his many appearances on the weekly sketch feature of the website was he had a very sort of sketchy line, very sort of sketchy art style. But here it's much more cleaned up. And the combination of the Dean White's colors, it's just, I thought this was just a gorgeous, gorgeous book. You know, even without the story, I thought it was just wonderful to look at.
You're correct.
It seemed like old sci-fi, 50 sci-fi pin-up pages.
Or even like Irwin Allen kind of science fiction. I don't know, just because the trans-dimensional kind of stuff and just, you know, like this guy hazarding into like from set piece to set piece featuring, you know, these frog people with lances and stuff and then giant bullfrog, you know, creatures. And it's just, I don't know, it's a trip.
Yeah.
It's just, it's the furtherance of Rick Remender wishing he could work with Wally Wood. I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. I mean, there's hardly anything to say, but one of the things is if you look, a lot of the color work seems to work without really dealing with the outlines of things. If you look at sort of any of the side shots of their like red space helmets, it's hard to sort of pick out the lines, which feels at the same time more realistic because real life doesn't have outlines, but also very expressionistic as well.
A little bit painterly without being a painted comic, which I thought was one of the things. I thought like the texture was very different from what we get from Scalera's work normally.
I think that one of the things that they're hitting here is this sort of line of we used to look at comics and go, oh, this looks like a painted comic and this looks like a regular comic, you know, but this is sort of, it's blurring those lines, ironically, figuratively and literally.
More of that with the book of a month later on.
I think it's a really nice balance.
Yeah.
That they've achieved I mean, this is as good looking a book as I have read in I don't know how long.
You guys turned on by the fish lady?
No.
No? Okay.
Nope.
Me neither.
I'm fine with saying that. Specious to say.
Yeah, it was just, you know, for anybody listening, maybe, so they wouldn't feel alone. But no, I didn't.
Okay, good.
I wasn't.
Are we shaming people who were turned on by the fish lady?
No, I was just saying, if you're out there.
There's nothing wrong with that.
We understand, but we didn't.
You know, less competition for you if you are. That's really all there is to
comics,
that.
The look is a lot about light and shadow instead of, you know, line. And I was just trying to think, like, is it about form? But I think it's about light. It's like crackling blue energy, pink energy.
Still talking about the fish lady?
No. Yeah. Her too.
If you are, though, could you talk slower?
So let's talk about this story. It's Grant McKay. He's the name. That's the name of the main character, right?
Yeah.
Grant McKay. That's what it is. He is a sort of science explorer, and as Paul mentioned earlier, maybe it was Josh, he sort of bounces from set piece to set piece.
That was me.
And it's very sort of seat of your pants. It's very much in the vein of, say, the opening of Raiders of the Lost Ark, where, you know, Indiana Jones is in the middle of a mission, and it's just very, like, lots of running from danger. And that's sort of, it feels like that through this whole issue, where he's going from danger to danger. And you're not quite sure what's going on, but you're learning as you go, and you're sort of flying by the seat of your pants, and it's very exciting and fun. And I wouldn't say I have 100% of a grip on the ins and outs of what's happening, but it seems like this guy, Grant McKay, is using the quote-unquote black science of the title to bounce around and do engage in forbidden science. And it was fun. It was a fun action set piece. It was gorgeously drawn, and you can really tell. And even without reading the little essay in the back, this is what Remender loves to be writing. And I think if he could only be writing pulp sci-fi, high adventure, he would be.
I get the sense that our hero is feeling a little bit guilty about what he's been doing. That's sort of the parallel thing: is that you're going through all of these set pieces, but you also have a ton of his narration. And feeling guilty about all of the people in his group, including some of his children, his family, who are put in harm's way. And it's sort of a race against time towards this cataclysm at the end. And then it turns out that doesn't happen, but something even worse happens when they try to get back home.
Whereas Heath Houston is a very solitary figure and Fear Agent, even though he had his friends and his colleagues, this Grant McKay has a group here. He's got like a group of scientists, a group of people, a group of collateral damage people who are around him that he has to take care of. So there's it feels very different, but also very similar.
He's sort of Reed Richards at his moodiest, like as the weight of the world, because he's brilliant, but then he's also, you know, broken some rules, and that's going to get not just him in trouble, but the people he cares about.
If Reed Richards was the, had the internal narration of a sad Irish drunk, that's what it is.
Maybe he
can't
does.
Help himself. It's what it is. I mean, that, it feels like I will say I could have maybe done with a little less of that.
With what?
The narration?
The sad guilting self narration, at least to begin with, I guess. Like, I just feel like he made the point a lot. On the one hand, like he kind of put it all on the page and it worked, but I feel like maybe it might have been better served to turn some of that, or at least dial that back just a little bit.
I kind of agree with you. It could also sort of be a character trait that he's really belaboring the point.
And it's totally true. This is almost a personal preference. Like, I don't like that much narration anymore. It's like,
yeah,
it's like I don't love. But at the same time, like, it worked. I get it. I know who this guy is. I know everything about it. And it's not like it didn't work. It's not like I don't want to read more.
There is a sense though that you're reading a lot of that, and you read through all the captions in the page because it's you know, this, you know, links in a chain, and then you're like, oh wait, I didn't look at the pictures. Like, I didn't.
Yeah, this.
I didn't really follow the visual action because it's parallel. It happens sometimes, but I don't want to lose all that entirely because it's all interesting stuff. It's just I sometimes had to like go back and reread things.
Maybe for me it's a little bit of the show don't tell thing.
Yeah,
like he's explaining a lot of what's happened before instead of showing it. Maybe that makes sense going forward. I don't really know. I can't say that. But
I think there certainly could be less as you don't have to work to establish the world and the, you know, what does this electric whip do. Now that we know what it does, we don't know.
That I'm cool with. Like, yeah. I liked all that. He did the same thing. He's done the same thing on a bunch of stuff. But like, that's just the reality. He did the same thing with Fear Agent. This is very similar to Fear Agent. If you liked Fear Agent, and I don't mean that as a criticism, but there's kinship. There's a slightly different kind of bubble space helmet.
How does he run in those giant metal shoes?
I assume that they have exoskeletons of their own that are slightly powered.
Because they don't look like you could run in them very well.
Yeah, they help him along.
Remender's really good at the main character who is guilty and self-flagellating and is going to do the right thing but screw up along the way.
Apparently he's also good at fish ladies who like to shove their cooters in people's faces. Also. That's another thing.
I did laugh at the bluefish or the frogs sitting around the table. Ribbit.
Yeah,
I mean, it just looked creepy.
I you know, and that's just one of the sort of stylistic things that made me immediately think of Fear Agent, because one of the things that was great about Fear Agent was that the aliens had their own like ridiculous language,
right?
And this is definitely continued here. Like, you could see these, you could see him cross. Like, I could see Houston showing up in an issue of this later.
See, the thing we learn in this issue is no matter what species you are, you enjoy a stripper.
Yeah,
especially creepy, lecherous frog people. It's just with the dead eyes. It's.
I think you're generalizing a little bit about the frog people.
I'm just saying, those guys.
They just eat huge mounds of glowing green shit.
Ribbit. Yeah. I think the other strong contender for pick, if it hadn't been for Black Science, was Saga 16, which was, I thought, one of the best issues in a while.
Yeah,
I really like this one a lot. There's a lot going on here.
It was still a bit of a placeholder issue. Like, we're all just hanging out in the house, hanging out with people, which isn't necessarily bad, because you get to know these people and they're interesting and they're, you know, their interactions are interesting. And we learned a little more about the half dead girl. Sort of. She made a face. that's enough for now.
I really just liked the beginning sequence a whole lot. Where the two reporters who've been showed up for a while now go to confront someone in the government, and he tries to trick them into thinking that our main character is actually a spy, and but then there's still clearly something going on in the background. I liked that sequence a lot.
Let me. This brought up a question, and this is more of a discussion question. This is not a criticism. Do you think at a certain point when he basically was talking to the two reporters and he was basically threatening to out them because on their world it's not okay to be gay?
Right.
Do you think that there's a certain point where you've got too much parallel with our world in this?
Is that
a little bit on the nose?
No, I didn't notice that, to be honest. I don't know about Paul or not, but didn't really occur to me.
I think it's consistent. Like, it feels right for this book.
True. Yeah, he does write a line with this.
Been
a lot of
people doing that since the beginning, and the book is a lot. I mean, it's a space opera, but it's also a book about sexuality and about relationships and
community or societies and how they
felt like different families and
like I said, it's just a thing I thought about. It's really interesting how he can come up with something as far flung as this, but really make it incredibly close to home and not have it seem hokey.
How do we feel about the talk about on the nose, the very specific comic book superhero criticism in the middle?
Remind me, because I read this.
Well, they're watching the holo videos of the superhero
circuit.
Right.
It's called the circuit. It's a virtual reality kind of thing. You put a bubble on your head and you're in the audience, and it's sort of like a telenovela with superheroes in masks.
Mm-hmm.
And they wear masks because a lot of them they have shady pasts. They say like they're criminals and stuff, so they kind of have to wear masks. And I'm excited for our main characters to hopefully join that world. It looks like that's the plan.
Yeah. That doesn't bother me. I think that there's probably he's partially talking about comics and superheroes, but dude's been working in TV for enough years to get frustrated with that kind of thing too.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was funny.
There's no like anagrams of creator names or things like that.
No, it's just that the idea of the kind of stories there are, the audience killing killer off already, it was only one page, but I thought it was very sort of sharp.
It's interesting that the two reporters are on the cover here, so it makes me think that their story could go further, which is kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And there's the naked lady.
The star. I think one of the most impressive thing about this, and I agree with you, Josh, that is, and it's one of the problems I had earlier was that we're just sort of circling at this point, is that while we're circling, we get a lot of interesting depth of character and a lot of interesting new characters and a lot of interesting new facets to the society that are revealed, which I like quite a bit.
And I like that we point out that, Cyclops guy and mother-in-law are, sort of flirting with each other, and that's been very obvious for the past couple issues. And
I was actually happy that they mentioned that.
Yeah.
It's really soon.
Yeah, it's soon. It's been...
it's like, my husband just died. Yeah, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Okay.
Well, you are old, so...
You are old, so... I like that.
Next issue, or it says after that, things got action-packed, so hopefully with the next issue, things sort of turn on.
It sounds like it's going to get to that Inglorious Bastards place where, we have Prince Robot IV coming in and them hiding somewhere under the floorboards, and they said he's going to be interrogating Cyclops guy, so...
I feel like at a certain point, they're going to have to... they're going to have to move on to whatever the next challenge is.
Right.
They're going to have their... You've been teasing Prince Robot now for 16 issues. He hasn't had anything to do. He's just sort of going places and looking for them.
Well, they're laying the pipe for them to join the circuit thing and for her to be an actor and him to be a stay-at-home dad is sort of the setup there. Yeah. And I don't... That's not a guarantee that that's what's going to happen, but it looks like the clear path. So once they get over this hurdle of the ex-girlfriend Bounty Hunter and Prince Robot IV, we can get that, and it'll be, a colorful new setting and set of characters, too.
It'll be some kind of all right.
Yep.
I still really get jealous at his letter column writing.
Yeah.
It's so effortless. It annoys me.
Conversational. And
just, yeah. Damn you, Brian K. Vaughan.
You're
so we had a pair of deaths in Uncanny Avengers 14 this week. Anybody so shocked and surprised by them?
I think I forgot to read this, and you're going to spoil it for me.
Yeah, we are.
Uh-oh. So,
damn.
Well, this is, the continuing story of the Apocalypse Twins, and since the beginning of this whole Avengers Unity Squad, Rogue and Scarlet Witch have not been getting along so well. And it appears that they both bought it.
Well, this issue, the big plan has been that Scarlet Witch is going to use Wonder Man's help to cast a giant spell to not send all the mutants to their own planet as the twins want, but to summon them all to where she is so they can fight the twins with a giant mutant army. But of course, Rogue misunderstands what's happening and attacks her and kills quote unquote kill Scarlet Witch, followed by Rogue then being very quickly killed herself. But
by Grim Reaper. Although right. Rogue at the time is borrowing Wolverine's power set, so does that mean but then she like exploded. So
yeah.
I don't know exactly how that happened.
She gets atomized.
Yeah.
Is this the first issue that Steve McNiven drew?
Yes.
Wow. Look at that.
Yeah, so
it's a little rough in places, I gotta be honest.
Yes. It wasn't very Steve McNiven-esque. If you told me it was him, I would have been surprised.
Yeah, I can see that. I wonder if that's to do with what inker.
John Dell's on this one.
I wonder who inked Old Man Logan.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was when he was
like
carry on.
Although this puts this closer to the Cassidy issues in sort of style.
Yes.
Like it looks like Eminem for some reason aping that style, or the inker doing that, but I don't know. But
Acuna was the high point.
Yes, I think it was funny that this as a coincidence came out the day they announced the Scarlet Witch for the movie, even though we all knew who was playing her because she'd been saying it all over the world. But
right.
The official announcement came the day that he killed, or they quote unquote killed her off in the books.
Yeah, I was thinking that while I was reading. She doesn't necessarily, she doesn't die on, you know, it's like the next panel would be her slumping over. So I don't know if she's dead or not. And she also, and you know, the other important plot beat is that she professed her love to Wonder Man, who earlier in the issue is worried about getting to an audition or something.
Who himself may or may not be dead.
Yeah,
a lot of people may or may not have died in this issue.
He dispersed into his ionic energy powers, and so I don't know.
I enjoy this story. I don't love it as much as I love Uncanny X-Force, but I like the pairing of characters. I think there are lots of fun together. Remender at least works with interesting artists. Even if
Dexter Vines.
Dexter Vines, that's right.
And this is not Dexter Vines.
No, this is John Bell. Doesn't look like a McNiven.
And so do you think, so at the end, she doesn't just like summon all the mutants. It sounds like it's very biblical, and it sounds like they talk about the heaven and like rise. It sounds like maybe some zombie mutants are coming.
But the dead mutants.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. Well, people love zombies, Paul.
They do.
And let's cram as many zombies in everywhere as we can. I don't know. I thought it was fun. I didn't, you know, the deaths don't make a really big deal to me because then, you know, they're not really deaths. So
we're jaded at this point, but
it was fun. I like Wonder Man. I like that he's in the mix here. Meanwhile, we had Avengers Reunion 18, which ended the first volume of the story.
Yeah, this is the end of Avengers Arena, and then it's going to be
right. Well, the story continues in a different volume, so this is the first volume of the story, in which the saga of the Murderer Island ends, and the surviving kids finally make it off.
And that's going to be Avengers Undercover is going to be next.
Right. This was great.
Yeah.
They didn't lie when they told us this was going to be the book to watch out for. And these 18 issues were tons of fun.
It's really interesting to read Hopeless's essay in the back.
How he didn't want to write this book at all.
He was like this. I was like, I haven't said this really in interviews, but I thought this was a terrible idea because he wrote this long pitch about what he was going to do, and it was going to culminate in Avengers Arena, where it was going to be sort of, he described it as like the Wizard's Cup or whatever. That
he was going to write a book basically for Ron. He was going to write a teen drama book.
Yeah, but then it was going to end with Avengers Arena, where it was a bunch of different schools coming together for a fight to the death, and then the editor said, just do that part. And he's like, what? And he's like, I can't do that as an ongoing series. But then he said, I was wrong. And it's been great to do it as, you know, an extended series, not just like, you know, five or six issues.
Yeah.
He's got to meet all these different characters, different people borrowing the Darkhawk armor.
That was really interesting because at the beginning, I really didn't know who most of them were. And, you know, they knocked them off. You didn't get to know everybody. But as they winnowed them down, like by the end, I really did feel like I know who all these characters are and kind of what they were about. And that was handled really, really well.
Yep.
Like it was one of those microcosm worlds that they built. And it really was like throw these people in a room, but also send monsters to kill these people at the same time and see what happens.
I like that there was fallout to this, you know, very end we get sort of the news coverage of as this story comes out and, you know, should these kids be superheroes? Is it too dangerous? And then, I also like the idea of Arcade uploading the raw footage because they try to cover up what exactly happened, they don't want the word to get out that, you know, this is what happened exactly.
It's interesting because it's basically if you're putting, you know, Marvel's supposed to be in our world, it's supposed to be. So there's almost nothing that you can do that with these kind of characters that the media is not going to be an issue.
Right.
And I think a lot of other books kind of try to ignore that. And I don't want to read that over and over again, even though that is the thing. These people are basically celebrities and that comes along with something. But I think for this it works, especially since they're kids.
Yeah, it's like Skyfall at the end. He puts up like a YouTube video and you get to slowly people are checking out this video and seeing that these people that are supposed to be, you know, teen heroes are actually trying to kill each other to stay alive.
What was interesting is that the first video is 1 of 30.
Yeah. He's got a lot of uploads. He's going to be there for a while for the computer.
Oh, tagging? That's a problem?
Yeah.
He finds a typo
in one of the titles. He's going to go back.
Putting all the metadata in, fixing the XML. It's not. People think that this stuff just happens. And
no,
I'm here to tell
you.
I mean, like, honestly, kidnapping all those young superheroes and building that world, that's going to be the easiest part.
Right. Dealing with
he's got
YouTube.
Editing. He's got music rights he's got to deal with.
Ugh.
Oh, questions of motion graphics. It's not.
Yeah. Plus, he's going to get sued by people who did Battle Royale and Hunger Games.
Yep, that's definitely a thing that's going to happen.
Can you tell we're all on like a post-turkey malaise?
I'm not. It's hard.
It's crypto-fantastic.
I'm tired. I can't breathe. I got allergies. This is not a set of top form. Flash 25 was the final issue of Francis Manapal and Brian Buccolato's run on the book. I thought it was noteworthy for a few reasons. One, Manapal drew a few pages at the end, but mostly it was drawn by Chris Sprouse, which was good. But two, it was also basically just a crime or a cop story because it was a young Barry Allen before he got the powers in Gotham City helping out during the blackout. And so basically just him on his own, you know, as with Bullock, who in this issue is a detective. We mentioned last time with Batman, he was a plainclothes cop, and here he's a detective in his suit. He's much thinner, though. And so it's the two of them sort of trying to figure out this drug crime. And I thought it was interesting. It's basically just a crime story, just a cop story. And Sprouse did a great job with it. He's, you know, Sprouse is awesome. And there's actually two Sprouse books this week, actually, with the Tom Strange book.
Right,
but really fun. I thought it was a really fun issue. And, you know, Buccolato and Manapal did a pretty good job with it. I thought there were ups and downs with the series, but ultimately I thought this was probably a successful New 52 book. It looked great, and the pages that Manapal drew were pretty great. I mean, there's a bit of a contrivance in that Iris West also happens to be there, you know, helping out, and they run into each other and share a little romantic moment at the end. But even though they're not really in a romantic situation in their, you know, in the present, but what are you going to do? I thought it was fun, though. It was good. Worth checking out. It's just a one-shot story. Paul, can you read the next thing? Because I can't breathe.
Yeah, sure.
if I talk too much, I can't breathe.
If you want to buy a defibrillator.
That guy's just my nose is stuffed up, but I can't breathe through it. So when I talk, I can't.
If you want to buy a treadmill, so you can get calves just like Barry Allen. Cyber Monday, it's coming. Head on over to ifanboy.com/Amazon and you can get those things. Check out those deals. Buy a TV that you wouldn't want normally.
I did that once Cyber Monday.
It's been all over Twitter today. Don't buy a TV. There's seriously TVs that are designed to be sold just on Black Friday and Cyber Monday because they're crap and they're anyways. But buy those. Do buy those at ifanboy.com/Amazon. Make that your bookmark when you buy stuff because we get a little piece of the action and we like the action. We need the action.
We're learning something about Paul today.
Our gloves are fingerless, not because it's fashionable. It's because we like to put our hands, warm them over trash cans that are on fire just to stay alive. So help us out. You can also do that by going to ifanboy.com/registration. You can subscribe. What is it called? You can be an iFanboy.
iFanboy member?
You can be an iFanboy member. Yeah, I'm new. $3 a month or $30 a year.
How much turkey did you eat?
It.
Or is that a sore subject?
Enough.
I talk about?
I had enough.
I would think there would never be enough.
It's really fun because like the whole day I'm just jonesing for turkey, and then it's over in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are other things like that, but I can't think of them at the moment.
I look forward to the second day turkey and stuffing and gravy sandwich.
That's a good day.
I know a lot of that people are into that.
The moist maker.
That's the best part.
Paul, right. Are we done?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I guess we're done. To do that, we really appreciate it.
Well, mention now, this is the holiday season. You'll be shopping for Christmas and other celebrations
this
as well.
This is the holiday season you're going to be shopping for.
So if you use the Fanboy Amazon like that, it'll help us out whenever you do.
And listen, and we know how it works. You go in there, you put something in the cart for someone else. You look at that dollar value and you go, I need to get something for me too.
Yeah, I'm not spending a lot of money.
Do that.
Yeah.
You do that over and over again. Then there's the January, well, I didn't get this stuff I wanted.
Yeah. And Super Shipper Saving is up to, what, is $30 now or
$35?
$35. It was $25? Yeah. Anyways, get that
hit stuff. That minimum at iFanboy.com.
All that stuff. Buy a PS4.
Hit that minimum at iFanboy.com. Hit that minimum. The iFanboy store.
So, Paul, what the heck is this book that you put into the script?
All right. This is the Shally Fish section of the show again. We talked about the Scooby-Doo last week. This time we're talking about Mr. Peabody and Sherman, number one.
Who published this?
IDW.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
This is the first one. There's a movie coming out with the guy from Modern Family as the dog. But anyways, this if the kids out there remember the Rocky and Bullwinkle, I was a big fan.
I know that I'm going to sound ignorant here, but that's going to be my new role. Is this a live action movie? Is this a CGI?
It's a CG movie. Yeah.
And they look mostly like the old versions of them.
The comic looks it's off model from both. It's its own look. Huh. I'm hard pressed to describe it. It's a lot of jagged lines, a nice heavy line to it. It's a beautiful style, but I don't know. There's nothing that looks like this. Who drew this?
You only assume that Roger Langridge demurred. I assume.
Art and colors by Jorge Monlongo.
That's delightful.
It's Shally Fish. And if you don't know the Mr. Peabody and the Sherman, it's a very intelligent dog who adopts a boy. And they go on time-traveling adventures. And this one, they go back into prehistoric times. And it's the invention of the wheel. And
is Mr. Peabody the kid or the dog?
Mr. Peabody is the dog. He's got glasses. So, you know, he's smart and a bow tie. Bow
tie. Well, anyone named Peabody is going to have glasses, bow tie, one of those jackets with the patches on the elbows.
Okay, well, racist.
Some sort of tweed vest.
No, he's sort of like Snoopy, but a taller head, I guess, for brain capacity, and white ears instead of black ears. And
why is it always going to be about racist people?
Sherman, he has the red hair and big glasses, and they're having adventures together. They're learning. This one is, I think, a little bit more playful than the Scooby-Doo one, which is very much just like Scooby-Doo formula. Like, it's by the book Scooby-Doo. This one's got the TARDIS in there. It's got the what's that? It's sort of like it's not the DeLorean. It looks like a mix of the Ghostbusters car and the DeLorean.
I hope you're not asking us because you're getting.
Yeah, I know, but it's so. Anyways, this is fun and get it for the kids. Learn about history. I don't know if it's all accurate, but. I wasn't alive during the.
Well, there's a talking dog, so I'm assuming it's not very accurate.
I'm saying the times that they've. All right, well, there's a woolly mammoth in there. It's great. It's fun. I liked it.
Gosh. All right. Enough with the glasses and the dog. Let's Sledgehammer 44. I can't seem to notice this book, even though every time I think, oh, Paul's going to be mad at me, but I just don't see it.
What? You don't
see
it?
Still, like,
you get Sledgehammer blindness.
I don't notice it in this in the list. I guess it's okay. Not a thing that I look for. But you were really into it. It's a big robot, World War II.
Yeah, well, it's a robot suit, and he's filled with like viril energy. It's I don't know, like this eldritch kind of horror energy, and as all Mignola things, you know, whence they come. Anyways, so this is set in World War II. It's 1933, and that we introduce. There was a two-parter before, and it was Mignola and Arcudi and Jason Latour on art. And the art was kind of revelatory. It was kind of amazing and really dynamic. And this is another artist, also good, Lawrence Campbell, color by, yes, I guess he did the colors.
Dave Stewart?
It was Dave Stewart. That's right.
It's Dave Stewart.
There's a scary Nazi guy in here, and he's going to go head to head with our hero, who's this. He was a World War II. He was an American Army grunt who ended up sacrificing himself. He died in a barn that was surrounded by Nazis with his guys and his soul. Before it passed on to the other realm, whatever, the other side, it went into this big robot suit. And so it's not a robot. It's just like a big suit of armor. And he laid waste to those Nazis like you want to see Nazis laid waste to.
Yeah, and you know who didn't? He didn't die in a barn surrounded by Nazis?
No.
Bull Rendleman?
No. He didn't.
He survived.
Yeah, he made his way out of there. They were in Holland, I believe.
Yes.
They'd all left Bull for dead because they didn't realize.
Nope.
Now, you don't want to get Bull Randall mixed up with Moose Heidelberg, who was killed. No. He was a lieutenant. He had briefly commanded of Easy Company.
I'm so tired.
Anyways, Sledgehammer 44, this guy is... They don't
Dave play. Stewart.
The army doesn't understand him. They don't know what he wants. He's very, well, he's very taciturn. He's not talking. He's not talking too much. And he's just like sitting in, they have him in an interrogation room and they're complaining like, this guy hasn't eaten anything. He hasn't pooped. He hasn't done anything. He's just sitting there. We don't know what he is. And
here's the thing. Imagine that you are a company XO, right?
Yeah.
You don't know where this suit sits in chain of command.
Who's commanding this suit of armor?
You don't know. You don't know what you're responsible for. You don't know.
It's oil for the joints.
Oil mm-hmm. can.
Exactly.
Oil can.
Yeah, but listen. You bring even one can of oil across a battle line from sort of the port to there. That's an amazing logistical feat, and they can't plan for that kind of thing because they don't know anything about it. They don't have the specs. They don't have that. They need to have that stuff laid out. It's a big problem.
You can't just drop a giant metal soldier into the middle of the war and expect it to be okay.
All right, here's a sexy part.
People work on these plans, you know. They're not just making it up.
So this lady comes in into the interrogation room and they're watching the stuff. And she's like, we don't know if he's human or not. I'm going to find out if he's human. And she starts like unbuttoning her shirt and she, you know, turns around and like, you know, pulling her shirt, you know, off the shoulders and stuff. And the guys in the background are like, stop her. And the other guy's like, no, don't stop her. This is cool. I like this. And and you think she's like, you assume like, oh, she's trying to like titillate him, see if, you know, she can get a rise out of this robot guy to see if he's alive or not, if there's a human being in there. But she's showing him the scars on her back, which she got from, because this is a tie-in to Lobster Johnson, the Iron Prometheus story, where Lobster Johnson saved her from, you know, from torture.
Is the robot also Lobster Johnson? Because I will buy it.
No.
I think that David Stewart colored those.
But Lobster Johnson appears in the issue in a flashback.
Well, Paul was talking. I looked over and noticed there was pie on the counter, and I got distracted. Sorry.
Anyways, if you like the Hellboy, this is a good book. This is a three-parter, so I imagine they're going to put the two of them together. The two.
If Lobster Johnson exists in this world, then that means this exists in Hellboy's world.
We have reference to BPRD and Professor Bloom. Broom, excuse me.
Now Josh has to go check it out.
And Nazis. So.
Nazis means Hellboy.
Hitler's in there. There's a Hitler cameo.
So we know that Greg Rucka likes. Shit.
Guys,
Rockford Files. We know that Greg Rucka likes Rockford Files. Apparently, so does Matt Fraction.
Oh, there's one more here.
My only comment about Hawkeye 14 is it just me?
I think the problem with this is that Kate and Clint play off each other very well, but Kate on her own is a little much.
I liked it. I really enjoyed it.
She doesn't have to be.
No, but she is. Like this is the Matt Fraction line that we worry about.
Okay.
I think it's issues he goes too far into that suit, you know, very precious side of things. And I didn't dislike it. I
agree.
Okay, I just didn't love it as much as I normally love Hawkeye because I feel like when it's just Kate, the issues have just been Kate by herself are usually a little too much. I think they go a little bit too wacky with her issues.
I like the wacky.
I
enjoy this a whole lot, and I like the.
I don't want a lot of this.
I like it's Annie Wu on art.
Yeah.
I liked it. It's I don't know. It's And I guess you would say that it's probably like too, I don't know, like Veronica Mars over the top. But
I've never seen Veronica Mars, but you just convinced me I don't ever need to.
You probably don't, but I love it. No, I thought it was really charming, and it's a nice
like
little
I used
caper.
To like her, but this issue I would not want anything to do with her.
And then you're like the police chief.
I go, oh god, Kate's coming back around.
Yeah.
You'd be the police chief.
Me?
Yeah. You would.
Get your reports in.
Like, you'd have to be a little more grizzled, but you can take a hardline stance like anybody's business.
I can get grizzled.
Yeah.
In a hurry.
No problem.
I thought this was fun. I liked it better than the previous issue with Clint.
What was that one?
I don't know. It was catching us up on stuff.
Right. Yeah.
I'm a little lost with the, like, I feel like they're just sort of meandering. I don't think there's any story right now.
No, I think we sort of hit a brick wall with the murder of Grills.
Yeah.
I think up until that point it was, you know, cooking with gas, and now it's sort of sputtering.
So the combination of it splitting off into, you know, the two coasts.
Yes.
And having, you know, following one Hawkeye and the other Hawkeye, and in addition to telling the story out of order a little bit with the Grills stuff.
Well, yeah, you literally can say it that way more intelligently if you want.
Quite literally, because of that, the story has not moved in many months, because we're just spreading the same ground over again. Great, that's fine, but it does make it feel like we're just running in circles. And if you'd like spending time with
separating this issue from that stuff, I think this is a good little pilot sort of for her. Although she had that previous issue, and we get to see more of setting up Madame Mask as. Like sort of her nemesis, and
they did that already.
Yeah, she's already been.
I know. But like they're setting that up with these two issues. She's continuing. It wasn't just a one-off thing. It's
why are you a Hawkeye apologist?
Because I liked it. I enjoyed it. I had fun. All right,
fine.
I'm sorry you didn't.
I didn't dislike it. I just
that's fine.
A little much.
Deadpool Annual 2013 featuring the character Madcap. If you folks at home don't know Madcap, he's one of the. Healing factor. He's a healing factor guy, and he can also make you go loopy and crazy by looking at you, like hypnotizes you with his eyes. And in this issue, which is by Ben Acker and Ben Blacker?
Blacker.
Yeah.
Ben Acker and Ben Blacker. Are you kidding me?
Even I know what this is. I'm so out of it, I'm in it.
And art by the wonderful
long-time listeners will recognize that.
Doc Shaner, Evan Doc Shaner, who drew my my Twitter avatar, Captain Haddock. I like seeing him on a book. And so this is a sort of they say it's like previous to Secret Invasion, but that's in their goofy sort of tongue in cheek Deadpool kind of way. And you know, they're both healing factor kind of characters, and Thor blows them up and they turn to ash, and then they reform into one person. So Madcap has been stuck in Deadpool's head for a while, and they're interacting, and now they've been split apart by the end of it. And
that
it's fun.
Deadpool's thing.
They do some fun with negative space, and how like they interact with each other in terms of the thought boxes, not thought balloons, but thought boxes, and the negative space, and how they're split apart, and how the two characters battle for control of the body. And I thought that was really fun and inventive.
It's great that Doc Shaner's in a book.
I agree.
Yeah.
He's not your traditional superhero big two artist, but I like it.
And he gets to draw Thor in here. He gets to draw Daredevil, Luke Cage, Deadpool, obviously.
I'm looking at a lot of characters he gets to draw here. I see Thor, Juggernaut, Wolverine, Beast, Storm, Spider-Man, the Lizard.
The Fantastic Four in there, or the
EFF?
I guess they're in their white costumes. Hulk.
A lot of dead ninjas.
Tour de force. More Doc Shaner, please.
So those are the comics of the week we're going to talk about. Now let's squeak the last book of the month in before the year. And then actually this is a sort of a special book of the month in that Paul did not tell us what it was. So Josh and I have no idea what we're in for.
Should we verbally let our approval or disapproval be known after he says it?
Well, I feel like Paul's already annoyed with us because we're being weird on this show already.
I just feel bad because I'm talking the whole time and like talking about books that I read.
This is what happens on the show. Sometimes.
You know, Ron used to get annoyed by us too.
It's only a matter of time before you leave to go join Dark Horse.
if we got off of that script, and he hated it.
Do you find people at home want to know what the book is?
I'm holding it up for my webcam right now. Is it offensive?
To some people. Letters? To some church groups, probably.
All right, so I'm going to tee you up here, Paul. The iFanboy December 2013 Book of the Month is...
Hellboy, The Midnight Circus.
I'm a little disappointed. I hope there's something more out there.
By Mike Mignola and Duncan Figueredo and who did the colors?
Dave Stewart.
All right.
Dave Stewart.
Dave Stewart. Okay, so...
So what is this book? Is it an OGN? Is it a compilation?
It's an OGN, an original graphic novel, but it's only 56 pages.
Whoa, is that what OGN means?
Original graphic novel? Yes. Usually they're a little bit longer than 56 pages.
Not necessarily. I mean, it's like sort of like a prestige format book,
yeah,
right?
That's what it used to be called. But it's hardcover, though.
Right. So they charge you what? $12.99?
It retails for $14.99.
Whoa!
I got it for less on the Amazon.
That Dave Stewart just didn't have time to color more pages.
Yeah, that's why.
There's your roadblock right there. I'm gonna just stop.
This is not a rush job. This is every page of this is beautiful.
I want to apologize to you, Paul, to everyone out there. This is what you get on a post Thanksgiving show. You used to get in the old days, Josh will remember or not, most likely not. That we used to do like a 20-minute post-Thanksgiving show because we were all so loopy.
Jesus,
but this time
Christ,
we gave you
up.
The full hour.
Stop talking.
Okay, I'll stop talking.
All right, there's two
Dave
different
Stewart.
Stuff. This is it's sort of Hellboy young. It's young or Lil with the apostrophe Hellboy. Pancakes Hellboy. It's the little kid with the big
fist.
And there's actually. You could look at it as the story that surrounds the Pancakes short story that, as you know, is one of the best comics ever.
Right.
I don't know if the two pages needs anymore.
Well, that's just sort of like it's a cameo appearance. It's not
waffles?
Really about that.
Does he have waffles in this one?
Huh?
Does he have waffles in
no,
this one?
No, he doesn't. All right. This is sort of Hellboy meets Pinocchio. He runs away from the BPRD. In the year, what year is it? They're in Connecticut, I guess, part of the BPRD.
Is it like what year was he found? Because he was sort of middle-aged in the war.
Well,
so
it's 1948. It's 1948.
Okay.
And actually, Professor Broom, in the background is talking to one of one of his associates, and he's saying like, "I don't think you should raise this kid because this is a demon. You don't know what I saw that night, you know, when he came through that portal." And Broom is like, I was there, I saw it, and I'm gonna raise this kid. He's, you know, this is my son, and I'm gonna take care of him, and I'm not gonna let anything bad happen to him. Hellboy is continually trying to hang out with all the other soldiers on the base, and they tell him you're too young for this joke, you know, go away. And he runs off and he ends up in, it's actually a rundown old circus or carnival. But when he enters it, it turns into like this enchanted circus, sort of like out of Pinocchio. And there's a lot of allusions to that, like the giant, you know, the whale eating Pinocchio, and Professor Broom is sort of like Geppetto trying to find him. And it's beautiful, and it, you know, there's the regular Duncan Figueredo style, and I've always really liked Figueredo's Hellboy issues, and I kind of miss him on the main Hellboy book.
How long has the business he's done it?
Well, they haven't really done any new Hellboy books for a while.
Well, it was, yeah, but like, you know, Mignola did Hellboy in Hell, and I kind of like Figueredo better these days.
I agree.
I like classic Mignola, but like in terms of what they're both doing now, I think Figueredo is a little bit more detailed and nuanced in his art, and so once he gets into that circus, and there's sort of maybe Rasputin, maybe some devils and demons and stuff trying to persuade him to start using his arcane powers to actually bring about, you know, the end of the world early on, and Professor Broom just kind of saves him by coming in and finding him. And when you actually get into the circus part of the book, Figueredo switches up his style to sort of, there's sort of a wash over it. And I think there were some comments on Twitter about people thought that it was painted by Dave Stewart, but it's actually not. It's just the brush strokes that Figredo's using and the wash that he uses over it. And then it's very lightly colored.
Wait, Dave Stewart colored this?
You know, I thought that and I didn't say it.
Okay. I assumed. I suspected.
When did
this come out?
This came out last month.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So it's one question. Yeah.
Is it something that a non-Hellboy, like somebody who has been following the Hellboy PRD stories, is something they can pick up and read?
If you just saw the Hellboy movie, like the first Hellboy, which I really enjoyed, I think that's sort of all you need to know. That this government agency is raising this hellspawn who says things like "oh crap." And
was that a not so subtle dig at the second Hellboy movie?
I really enjoy the second Hellboy movie. I'm probably an apologist for the Golden Army. But I'm saying all you really need to know is that first Hellboy, that origin story.
Okay,
where he's a little hell baby and comes through. But it's short and sweet. Not for kids at all. It's very dark. And if you go back and watch like the original Disney Pinocchio movie, it's really heavy.
All those old Disney movies are heavy and scary.
There's it's all about temptation and stuff. And there's a lot of dangerous paths that Hellboy doesn't take.
Well, he could have had French toast. Could have gone for an omelet. No, he went for pancakes.
Is that reprinted in the book?
What is
the pancake story reprinted in the book?
He's hanging out with the other soldiers, and I haven't read pancakes in a while. I don't know if this is the first time he's eating pancakes, and they're just showing you in the background, or this is like another time when he's eating pancakes.
I imagine pancakes. You don't know what we're talking about, by the way. Search Hellboy pancakes. Google image search it.
It's what, two pages?
You'll probably find it's two pages. You'll find a high res scan of the two pages, and it's probably the best 2-page comic book that I've ever read.
Great short story, one of the best short stories.
In terms of, it's a great example of how storytelling works in comics in a very compact amount of space.
So you've basically got the Beast of the Apocalypse, who's being raised by a kindly old professor, and once he tastes earthly pancakes for the first time, which he calls pancakes, then all the devils down in hell know that they've lost him to the side of good. And you get that in two pages. And it's wonderful.
Well, they are delicious. I mean,
if I knew a girl and I wanted to flirt with her, I would probably call her Pam Cakes.
Pam Cakes?
If her name was Pam. It's possible that would happen. Mm-hmm. After I felt comfortable with her. I wouldn't do that, say, if I didn't really know her. It wouldn't be an opening gambit, for example.
All right, so that was the book of the month. Paul, thank you for the final iFanboy book of the month for 2013. We will come back before the end of the year and reveal our book of the year.
Paul, will you ever agree to do this again?
It's going to be at least a week.
You mean the show or the book of the month?
Any of it, really. I'm leaving that open-ended for him to answer.
Okay, do we have some audience questions?
Let us get some audience questions. Paul, do you want to read the first one?
Peter,
or should I read it?
Peter from Victoria, British Columbia. As goes so many of your listener questions, I was big into comics in my youth, mostly Top Cow comics of all places, probably due to Michael Turner's love of drawing mostly naked women, but have recently become immersed again with comics. There's lots of things going on right now I love. Saga, Hawkeye, Daredevil, and a lot of the Star Wars comics, as I'm a big Star Wars fan. But every time I try to find a list of comics you need to read, it's always the same stuff. Watchmen, Miller's Batman, Civil War, Preacher, Swamp Thing, etc., etc. Having only been back in the game for a year or so, what are some of the older things you recommend that maybe aren't the same 10 that always get talked about? So the deep cuts, I guess. Essential deep cuts.
So why don't
do they have to be?
Well, it's just stuff that's not necessarily, in those lists. You know, the 10 books are on the list. Those 10 big ones. And so if he was reading Michael Turner stuff, that means he was around in the 90s, and then he dropped out. So stuff from the early 2000s, let's say. Let's all recommend one book.
The first thing that came to me that I was, you need to read Darwin Cooks Parker.
That's a good one.
If you just came back, you probably missed those.
Powers.
Really?
Yeah, I see the first line of Powers, definitely.
I went back and read it.
Great.
I don't know. I don't know. It's a little rough.
I think that's a part of what's great about it. It's an indie book. It's a pure indie book.
Maybe.
Fear
Agent, we were talking about Rick Remender's Black Science.
Transmetropolitan.
Transmetropolitan is a classic in that sense. Paul, what would you say?
I'm gonna say BPRD. Get those big deluxe editions.
Those Green Plague of Frogs books.
Yeah, get those.
Starman. Is that on Alpha List anyway?
It's hard to say. I don't know, but
okay.
But those are good ones.
Yeah. In the same vein, if you like, you know, Parker, but you wanted, you know, New Frontier really is probably it's still my favorite sort of DC story that's been done over the last 15 years, I think.
I remember when we got out of college and we sort of started doing our fanboy, it was sort of a really great time to be, you know, discovering comics again as an older reader. So you had Powers and you had Transmetropolitan, you had Planetary. Gotham Central, you had Astro City, you had Queen of Country.
Yeah.
That was the 2000, 2001 period. There's a lot of great stuff coming out.
If you wanted just mainstream stuff, the first 50 issues of Ed Brubaker, Captain America. It's probably the best sort of mainstream example there. Bendis' Ultimate Spider-Man, you know, as a straight long run of issues is fantastic.
Yeah. That was a good time. Superman, yeah. That's probably on the list.
All-Star Superman.
Those are some good ones.
Yeah,
that'll do you, Peter.
That's several thousand dollars worth of books. That'll work.
All right, so Kevin wrote in and said, so I just listened to your review of Thor the Dark World. And I've been listening to you guys for a long time now. I guess your guys' opinions are starting to rub off on me. And due to that, I'm left wondering, is there any reason for me to continue with my adventures with DC? Over the past few weeks and episodes, I can count on my one hand how many DC books you've discussed. And you guys clearly believe their movies are inferior. And any future movies have no hope. So, is there anything for us DCites to hold on to hold on for?
First of all, movies and the comics have nothing to do with one another.
Yeah, they're completely different.
Both in terms of quality or...
One woman oversees both of them, but they don't... And Jeff Johns works on both, but that's it.
I wouldn't put them together. Arrow's this week, pretty I look fun. To see...
Yeah, Arrow's a lot of fun.
Just over
this week, I looked to see if there are any DC books, and I had to triple check, and I was like, I don't want to read any of these.
We have made no bones about the fact that we think the execution of the New 52 has been, for the most part, on the whole, a disaster. And that wasn't our contention in the first year of it. We thought we were really enjoying it, but I think it's gotten worse as time has gone on. And they've clearly set an agenda and a tone they want to hit. And we're just not in that audience base for that, which is fine. Not for
if
us.
You are. I mean, there's other stuff. There's stuff to read in there. I mean, we're all still reading DC books, I think. Yeah. Are we all still reading Green Arrow?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm reading... Still reading Animal Man. I read Swamp Thing's been really very good. Wonder Woman. We're all reading Batman. I'm going to be reading Aquaman. I'm going to be reading Action Comics.
Right. Yes,
Batman,
Action
Superman.
Comics.
There's still good books there, definitely.
There's actually, you know, there's been some bright spots lately. It's been getting better here and there.
And in the last week's show, we talked about a lot of DC books. It was a show before. Yeah. One of the last couple shows, there was a lot of DC books on it. But... I mean, Marvel's doing a lot of good things and Image is doing a lot of good things. And it's hard in comparison to those two companies for DC at the moment in terms of what we like anyway.
You know, at the same time, like it's kind of like DC's not going after the same audience of superhero fans.
Yeah.
The other superhero fans are going after.
I think
that's kind of an interesting thing.
I think Axel Alonso in a Q&A said that, you know, like Marvel doesn't have a house style. And I don't know if DC officially has a house style. I mean, there's certainly books that... look very different, but there's not as much diversity in terms of visual style.
Especially you would never see Doc Shaner on a DC book, even though you should.
Yeah.
You know?
You would see him at most on Adventures of Superman.
Right, a digital,
digital first thing.
A lot of the digital stuff is fun. That's, I mean, if you want to hold on to hope, it's a lot of the stuff that's happening in digital and maybe the hope that some of that will, you know, trickle up to the print stuff.
It has, I think. I mean, you're starting to see some of those guys. You're looking at Jeff Park for writing work. Hopefully.
And, there's another issue of Greg Pak's Action Comics coming out next week. We'll see if that continues the strength of the first issue That was a real, like,
yeah, there's just good stuff, and there's, but you know, on the whole, it's just not what we're into at the moment. So we don't.
Man Unchained is pretty good.
Yeah.
Right.
Despite Jim Lee.
When it comes out.
Yeah.
So it, I mean, the biggest thing is that, Kevin, if you're enjoying them, then you should read them no matter what we think about them.
Yeah. But if you're just hanging on because you think you should read it, that's a bad reason to keep doing it.
Right.
They'll always be there if you want to come back. If you're listening to the show, we'll let you know. We're gonna be excited if there's a really good DC book again. We're going to tell you about it.
And we're looking.
Yeah, we are. We're doing our damnedest.
But I think, as Paul said earlier, I think Arrow is a much better show than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You just have to really,
I'm really excited for the Flash show.
Yeah, you have to really like David Goyer if you're going to be into the movies. But yeah. And the animation stuff's still really top notch.
Bleak worldview.
And again,
David Goyer has done some really good comics in the past.
Yes.
Or been involved with them at least. He did a bit of Starman in the middle. He did the space stuff, I think.
I'm not saying he's a bad writer. I'm just saying you have to. He's
yeah, no, I know.
Putting, from what I read, he's being put in charge of the entire DC movie slate, like Kevin Feige's in charge of Marvel.
He's made them a lot of money.
Yes. So, anyway, I think if you like the stuff, read them. No matter what we think, if you're not happy, you know, take a break for a while. Come back.
It's fair. So, there you go. If you want, we ran out of room for any more voicemails, but if you want to write us, it's contact@fanboy.com, or you can voicemail us at, is that a verb?
You are. You just fucking verb that like some tech.
Wow.
Tech.
I did. I'm shocked that I've never done that. I've never heard it. It sounded like completely new. You know what they say now? They say inbox me. 888-FANBOYS.
I would literally punch them.
Oh, my God.
2697.
I would punch them.
Yeah. Anybody who says inbox me is basically the same thing as the male neighbor in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. The
Todd,
modern version of that
Todd
guy.
Todd and Margo.
Yeah.
Fucking Todd Margo. So let's quickly talk about the Hollywood schedule, the holiday schedule for the rest of the year. We're entering December, final month of the year.
I wasn't talking to you.
Margo. It always gets a little wonky towards the end of the year. So let's quickly go over this. So we've got, this is episode 414. 415 is next week, where we're going to go over the best of the year from, you know, of different categories. 415, 416 will be the week after. That'll be the, we'll go over the picks of the week for the year, like we normally would do on the website. That'll come out on December 15th, and that will be the final Pick of the Week show of the year. So December 15th is the final Pick of the Week podcast. The week after that, the 22nd, will be the year-end all-media show that we've been doing for the last, every year we've been doing the podcast. We go over all the stuff we've been watching, TV, movie, film, you know, all the stuff that's not comics. And then the week after that, the 29th, we're completely off for the holidays, and we will return on January 5th with episode 417. So the next two, you'll have two more Pick of the Week podcasts over the next 2 weeks, and then we got the All Media show, and then we're off, and then we'll be back after the new year. So that's the schedule coming forward. If you're a new listener to the show, you may not know about our sort of wackiness at the end. So that's how it goes. We'll be back to a normal schedule in January. So in the meantime, head over to fanboy.com, comment on this show, and you should probably use it as a way to support Paul in having to deal with whatever he had to deal with and whatever happened in this episode. I apologize. I'm sorry.
Tim Stewart.
Tim Stewart did color that book, though, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm almost sure.
Twitter.com/iFanboy, Facebook.com/iFanboy is where you can find out what the pick is before it happens on the episode.
Really, I really like Dave Stewart. He's a nice guy.
Very nice man.
Yeah. You can also email us at contact@iFanboy. Like I just said, or the voicemail. You could voicemail us. That actually works because mail is a verb.
Yeah, that's true.
That's why it doesn't sound entirely wrong.
The thing
you can say about Dave Stewart is, you've never looked at it and go, man, he phoned this in.
No.
It's effortless, but it's always perfect.
Yes.
If you've liked previous episodes of the show, write us a review on iTunes. Think about those. Add them up and divide by however many. This is really going to fuck up the curve. Write us a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to podcasts. Put on a little thumb drive and toss that in the stocking. And what the hell is this? Why didn't you get me a gift card?
I can't be held responsible for the combination of turkey and allergy medicine. That's whatever's going on here. So I don't know what Josh's excuse is.
I got turkey yesterday and today, and then 5 hours of sleep because it's stayed up, and then they wake me up.
I passed out on Thanksgiving at 6 o'clock, like somebody injected me with a sedative, like I was beating.
I'm not on drugs. I have no excuse. I don't blame Babe Stewart for any of this. He's not responsible.
I drank bottled water throughout the day. I'm fine.
Listen, you.
That's good.
I put up a Christmas tree.
I have to do that tomorrow.
A whole day. Just like you clowns.
I think the most important thing, as Josh said, is Dave Stewart's not the one to blame for this.
No, he's not. I just want to make sure that if Dave is listening or Dave's friends or family are listening, that it's not.
Most importantly, if his mom is listening. Because we know his mom's a big fan of the show.
Mrs. Stewart, listen. It's not Dave.
He's going to shoot one of his Eisners out of a t-shirt cannon at you.
Hold him out of there. And he wouldn't even notice it's missing.
Exactly.
That's how many Eisners he has.
He just has a quiver of Eisners on his band. Just
be awesome. The only way we're going to get one.
That's the sound of t-shirt cannon.
This place is lousy with Eisners. Somebody, will you please move these Eisners, Mom? Dave, we're going to have to do something about these Eisners. Mom! I'm trying to color!
Why are you...
done. Wait, hold on. Apparently I'm getting another Eisner. Come on.
Till next week, I'm Connor.
I'm
Paul. Who keeps nominating me for these things?
Oh my God, I've had it with you people. I'm spinning off into my own podcast. I'm done.